We're going to take a look now at the essential battleground state of Florida. With 29 electoral votes, it's the largest of the swing states, and by some analyses, Florida is the key to the whole presidential race.
Florida is like America. It's big, diverse, and idiosyncratic. It's also voted with the winner of every presidential election, except for two, since 1936.
Staff writer Dexter Filkins is a Florida native, and he's been reporting on the electoral battle that's taking place there. In 2016, Donald Trump won the state by just over 100,000 votes.
Elections in Florida are almost always won by a narrow margin, and the state has a long history of voting problems and voter suppression. This year in Florida, there have been a number of major shifts in the electorate which could shape the outcome. Demographic changes, a big increase in mail-in voting, and a fight over the voting rights of felons.
Dexter has talked with a lot of people about what those changes mean and how they may determine the winner of the state's electoral vote. First up here is the longtime U.S. Senator Bill Nelson, a Democrat, who lost his bid for re-election in 2018.
Okay, Senator Nelson, we've seen over the years that the margins in statewide races in Florida, including often the races for the presidency, are often so narrow. What makes Florida so complicated to win?
Well, Florida is like the country because the country has moved to Florida. You think about it. South Florida is, particularly in Miami-Dade County, Hispanic. Move on up into Palm Beach County, and you've got the Northeast has moved there. Go over to the Southwest Coast, Sarasota on down to Naples. You've got the Midwest of the U.S. has moved there. Go up to North Florida, and they talk with a very flat accent as the Old South. And by the way, I found that as an elected official over 40-plus years, that my accent could actually change which part of Florida I was in.
In terms of demographics, the demographics of Florida, who's Biden strong with, and where is Trump strong? And if you look at the two candidates, who are they failing to capture in Florida?
Well, there are two significant changes that have occurred, which is those 65 age and older. And this is a demographic that has traditionally been going to Republicans. But that demographic has changed for Joe. And I believe that it probably is because of the underscoring of the coronavirus, the serious nature of how this has been botched by the current administration. And so that's one component of the electorate. The other one that's changing is that we don't know yet, but it appears that younger people are going to vote in much larger percentages. And if that's the case, that's a vote that should go to Joe instead of to the incumbent president.
If you were running Joe Biden's campaign right now, what would you be doing? What would you be focused on in Florida?
Well, the coalition that will elect Joe this year in Florida will be strong out of the urban counties. And, of course, because Joe Biden is a political moderate, he will have a lot better chance at swing counties across the middle section. Drive out a big vote in South Florida in the three big counties there, and then make inroads into North Florida with the African-American community and neutralize the huge Republican vote that will surround in the more rural counties surrounding Jacksonville.
When you look ahead to Election Day, we're in the middle of a pandemic. What's it going to look like?
For the first time ever, by Election Day, at least half of the electorate will already have voted. Voted by mail or early vote. What's going to happen, uniquely in Florida, because 22 days out from the election, the mail-in ballots are being processed to double-check the names, the signatures against the signature on file, so that presumably all of those mail-in ballots are ready to go ahead and put in the machine at 7 p.m. on election night. And so you will not only get the processing of the day of the election ballots, but the ballots that have been already cast previously. And it could be that you have the early results tilting to Biden, and then it's starting to narrow as the evening goes into the next day.
But there's a lot that can go wrong on election day in Florida. Ion Sancho is a retired election supervisor from Leon County, which includes Florida's capital, Tallahassee. He's been very active in trying to maintain the integrity of the electoral process.
Ion, it seems that the driving premise of the Republican playbook is lower turnout. Like, lower turnout elects Republicans, higher turnouts elect Democrats. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Unlike the Republican legislatures across the board who are not approving vote-by-mail drop boxes, the Florida legislature, they were planning on utilizing vote-by-mail as the primary method to harvest Republican votes. So they went ahead and passed a law saying that every early voting site in the state had to have a vote-by-mail drop box. That was before President Trump changed the playbook on them and decided to attack vote-by-mail, really threatening a number of elected officials' campaigns who were Republican here in the state. And they squawked about it mightily and got Trump to sort of give Florida a pass.
One of the things that people have talked about is with this kind of deluge of mail-in ballots that we're going to have, is that you're going to have lots of signatures that will be challenged, will come under challenge. Are you worried that that process could get out of control?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Because as I witnessed personally in the 2000 election, when we were doing the canvassing of the signatures of the voters, party representatives would be in the canvassing room, and depending upon the political affiliation of the voter, would lodge a challenge, which would immediately slow the process down. That's the worrisome point. I'm hoping that we can have a number of representatives of the media at the various canvassing boards, which often does not occur. And Florida has an open counting process. As soon as the polls close or the last voter has voted, the citizens are allowed to be in that polling precinct and actually watch what the staff is doing in terms of closing it down, printing out the final results. All those eyes on the process will help the process be better. Basically, from my point of view, secrecy only helps two categories of individuals, those who are corrupt and those who are inept.
One issue which came up repeatedly in my reporting on Florida is Amendment 4, which was intended to be the largest enfranchisement of voters since 1971. Amendment 4 was approved by Florida's voters in 2018 and said that all but the most violent felons, once they had served their sentences, had the right to vote. That could have meant nearly 800,000 new voters in Florida this November. But then the Republican-controlled legislature stepped in and passed a law dictating that ex-felons could vote only if they first paid all the fines, restitution, and fees imposed at their sentencing.
Victor, hey!
Betty!
Hey, how you doing?
Good, it's great to see you kind of in person.
Yeah, kind of.
Betty Riddle is one of those former felons. She grew up in a segregated neighborhood in Sarasota, Florida. At a young age, she became addicted to crack cocaine and was convicted of 5 felonies. But then she turned her life around, and today she works for the Sarasota County Public Defender's Office.
You were able to vote because of the passage of Amendment 4,
to the Florida Constitution, which was approved by, I think, 60% of Florida's voters. What was your reaction when that passed? How did you feel?
When I first heard it, I was like the first one in my office to walk down to register to vote. So it was amazing. Me and my family celebrated, you know. It was a victory.
I mean, I'm just curious, but did you feel like having been to prison that you were, that it was over?
It was free. I was free. I was free from the chains. I had no chains because you don't know as when you become a convicted felon and being released from prison, you finish one sentence and start another one. So, you know, that becomes your lifestyle. You never think about voting because you know you're not entitled until that day came.
You cast your first ballot. The Florida legislature voted to require that all convicted felons, even after they've served their sentences, have to pay all their fines, restitution, and fees that were imposed at the time of their sentencing. And that, as you know, that's effectively taken, you know, several hundred thousand potential voters are not going to be able to vote now. What do you make of that law?
First of all, I was really upset because at the beginning, I knew it was a poll tax. I already knew it wasn't about court costs or fines because when they did impose that on us, they knew that it would affect all the low-income people, and they knew that we couldn't afford to pay that before this election. They knew that. They didn't want to say it, but that's pretty much what it is. We're paying to vote. No one else is paying court costs and fines to vote. But we as felonies, we have to pay to vote. That's what we're doing. I never thought it was about the money. I always believed in my heart that it was about stopping us from voting. Always.
Why don't they want you to vote?
Okay, I think they passed a law to keep us from voting Democrat.
Have you been in touch with other people who were in prison or convicted of felonies who are also planning to vote or having problems or like what are people saying?
Yes, like every Saturday I join a couple of organizations that I go up from 12 to 4 and I go door-to-door service asking people have they registered to vote, do they owe court costs and fines, and a lot of them gave up. After that bill passed last year, a lot of them gave up because they didn't want to challenge politics. They just say we're not, they're going to win. And, you know, I lost a lot of friends and people just returning from prison. I lost a lot of them after that because I had them when it first passed. So, you know, lately I've been crying out to the young generations to stand on our behalf, so the ones that really can't afford to vote and stand for us and vote. I've been reaching out to a lot of young kids through my grandkids, and I think that we have a chance of reaching more people between now and the day to vote. I really do, and that's what I'm going to do.
Latino voters are going to be 17% of the electorate in Florida on November 3rd, and therefore a potentially decisive group in determining the outcome. I called my colleague Stefania Taladrid, who has been looking at the complexities of Latino politics in Florida.
And Steph, I know we can't talk about the Latino vote in Florida as anything remotely monolithic, but how decisive is it?
The way you win Florida is by winning the Latino vote. And I know the media pays no service to this just because we ourselves call it the Latino vote. But, you know, what does that mean? And in Florida, I think there's been a lot of focus on Cuban Americans because, you know, they have a great deal of political power in the state. But there's a huge diaspora of Puerto Ricans, and even Ecuadorians, Nicaraguans, Mexicans, Peruvians. And so actually that's something that can benefit Biden, because I think it's fair to say that the Cuban American vote is largely lost to Trump at this point, but that's not the case among Puerto Ricans, and some of the other diasporas that I mentioned. That's really, you know, Biden Biden has an opportunity among those communities to really improve his standing among Latinos here.
So Steph, what's Biden doing to kind of get the support of the Latin community, and whether that's Cuban or Puerto Rican or Brazilian or Argentine or Ecuadorian, what's he doing?
So, yeah, I mean, a lot of it is TV and radio, too. I mean, you turn on the radio here, at least in Miami, and chances are you will come across a Biden ad. Most of them are in Spanish, of course. But it's not just about the ads. They have a pretty robust campaign apparatus here, and they're holding events pretty much, you know, every day. Just for the vice presidential debate, they had a drive-in watch party. They're also holding caravans. They call them Caravanas con Biden. And so, again, going back to this idea of how important the diasporas are, you have Cubanos con Biden holding the caravanas. You have Puerto Ricans, Boricuas con Biden holding the caravanas. And these are just long caravans of anywhere between hundreds to 1,000 cars driving around the city, just showing their support for the candidate.
You mentioned the Biden ads, and I'm just wondering, are they good?
Yeah, I mean, the ads are really, really good. And as you know, the Republican Party has really focused on the Red Scare, right? On really portraying Biden as this puppet of the far left who will usher communism into the country and bring in very radical policies, right? And the Biden campaign has actually responded to those kinds of negative ads with their own. And there's one in particular in which they compare Trump to a caudillo-like figure, you know, a Latin American strongman like Chavez, like Castro. And it's actually a notion that's resonating with a lot of people, because in conversations with Nicaraguans, Venezuelans, and even some Cubans, they tell me, you know, when I see Trump, I see a Daniel Ortega type of figure. You know, when I hear him criminalizing protesters, when I hear him criminalizing the press, I recognize those profoundly authoritarian instincts.
And Steph, you know, every 4 years we hear about the sleeping giant that the Latino vote is in the United States, and it hasn't always materialized. And I just wonder, is this the year when its full effect will finally come into view?
I don't have an answer for that yet. But, you know, this year, for the first time in this country's history, Latinos are the largest minority voting group, right? So there's tremendous, tremendous, tremendous power behind their votes. And I surely hope that they'll exercise it.
Dexter Filkins is a staff writer, and he spoke with Stefania Talladreed, also of The New Yorker, and we heard from former Senator Bill Nelson, Ian Sancho, and Betty Riddle. You can find Dexter's reporting on Florida and a great deal more at newyorker.com.